bring our religious ed classes all together. So when the parents gather with their children at the beginning, we all start together in the cafeteria. We have a brief prayer. We do some kind of maybe a song or some experience. And that began to get the parents engaged in faith activity outside of church with their child in our setting. And then we moved.
So starting with one step forward and getting parents together. Mary Jane, what about you? One bit of advice for a parish.
I would agree with what you said, and I would add that really getting the parents involved in the development and the creation and the direction of how you're taking your program, I think is significant in getting that ownership on the part of the parents.
That's a great idea. So either surveying parents or making some random phone calls or getting a board or a task force of parents together so that they can help to create.
We had a team of parishioners that helped to develop our program.
Nice, nice. I like that idea. Claire, what about one little bit of advice? We got a minute left.
Okay, very quickly, the older I get, the more I'm learning that people don't need to know about Claire's faith journey. They need to grasp their own faith journey.
Yeah.
So I'm trying, we as a staff are trying to be less directive. Here's what we know you need, and saying, we don't know what you need. Mm-hmm. Can you help us know what you need?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess being less directive and more receptive
is
what we're working on.
Yeah, great. Well, I know that the three of you are doing fabulous things. Whenever anybody in the Archdiocese talks about family events, your names all come up. So thank you so much for what you're doing, especially in this year of strong Catholic parents.
You're welcome. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hope to see you soon.
Okay. Bye.
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 Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through. Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, you know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in? And gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, is this something you can do? And I looked at her and says, you're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head.
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, it's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Catholic Charities. I'm Monsignor Mike Boland here for the Voice of Catholic Charities. And welcome to our show this morning. And one of the things that we are trying to reflect upon during these times is things that are we hear about so much in the media. And obviously, one thing we hear a lot about is nutrition, what's good for us, what's bad for us, and how it seems to always be a moving target. And also, one of the challenges of Catholic Charities we have with the people who come to us for help, that they are often nutritionally on a low budget, so that they don't have a lot of money to, when we think about how do we try to eat healthy and how do we do that as much as possible. And, you know, just recently Time Magazine had an article, Eating Healthy is Cheaper Than You Think. And they reported on a Harvard School of Public Health's finding that it costs $1.50 more a day to eat more fruits, vegetables, and high-quality meat and fish and meat. But however, a lot of our clients at Catholic Charities and people who are from low income, that, you know, adds up for a person, you know, about over $550 a year. And while encouraging people, the general public, to do that, it is often a challenge for them to be able to try to eat healthy. And a lot of our food pantries and our women, infant, children's centers, our early childhood centers, our senior centers really do a lot to try to encourage good food, good nutrition, and that actually there's nutritionists on staff that really are there to try to make sure that what is provided to them gives them healthy choices, healthy options, and yet that is a challenge for us, but it's important to try to do because we actually try to also teach. And joining me this morning are two of our nutritionists joining us today. One is Katie and Antonuke. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to our show this morning. And we're going to kind of just give a kind of reflection and talk today a little bit about helping us better understand how we try to get the goal of good nutrition to the populations that we serve. And have you both read that article on Time Magazine's $1.50 a day?
Yeah, I did read it. And one thing that I think is important to point out is that $1.50 amount that they are reporting is for an adult. So it's based on a 2,000 calorie diet a day. So when we're looking at our families who have young children, it may be less than that $1.50 to serve them the healthier meals. Overall, I was surprised by the small difference. But I think when you look at it over a year and you look at it for a family, that's when it becomes unmanageable for the low-income families that we support.
Right.
And I did read the time management for, and I was looking at it, and I was, like Katie said, I was also surprised. With our senior service, like a lot of our seniors are under government funding, and so, you know, that money is very, they're very tight with what it is they can purchase and things like that. So I do have seniors that have to go and go to different food pantries just to get to make ends meet and things like that.
Yeah. I think it's also a real challenge, not only for, like the clients, but also to try to be able to, even if they had the money to do it, because in many communities that they're in are in food deserts. Mm-hmm. There is not options. And the one time, unfortunately, the options there are often very expensive. Because it seems that so it's expensive to get to the store for them because it's not close.
Right.
And then the ability to have choices, and the choices often are very expensive. And so maybe we could talk, you know, so I think there are a lot of challenges for that study. And the study, I think, is it's a different kind of a way of looking at things. And it's, in one sense, it's helpful to look at it and see for the average person, but we have to think about how does that affect, or how do we help people individually that come to Catholic Charities, which is a client who's usually struggling in many ways other than just food. Sometimes they're struggling with their rent or utilities or other things. So there isn't like this extra amount of income, and especially if they're on seniors on a fixed income, if they're on their Social Security, or they're on a small pension, or on a disability. So there's a lot of different factors there. What do we think about, maybe we could talk about how much each of you do in your respective role as nutritionists.
Well, I'm the Nutrition and Food Program Coordinator for our 10 child development centers located in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area, five of those centers being Head Start. So we work a lot with children between the 6 weeks and 12 years of age. We provide them with meals through the Child and Adult Care Food Program. So they receive breakfast, lunch, and snack And we also, or I specifically go out and do nutrition education for our staff so they can incorporate that into the classroom along with education for the parents. We do some one-on-one counseling as well for children and families who have allergies or medical issues related to nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Don't you?
And then I'm a nutrition educator at the Senior Services Department. And so currently I pretty much create like different healthy snacks for the home care aides to make. The home care aides, they go out to the client's home and they have a particular care plan that they have to follow. So pretty much I just do like different, make up like a different healthy eating recipes, create recipes, and then also I do nutrition demonstration at the end of the pay week on the 30th of each month, and just showing the home care aides, you know, different ideas that they can take on when they go and to the client's home and make, because a lot of our seniors, they have a lot of doctor's appointments, so one of the main goals is to find different healthy eating that they can take with them while they're going on the doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just a big challenge, too, that for seniors, there are many ways they're entrenched in how they've eaten for the last 60 mm-hmm. or 70 yes. years or more. And so to try to sometimes, although many times they're very open, especially if they have, you know, just found out that they're a diabetic or there's mm-hmm. other kinds of conditions or just how that interaction of food with their medicine mm-hmm. and all those things. And that's a real challenge. I think sometimes seniors are taking those options. They're making decisions, and sometimes it means they don't eat certain things or they don't take their medication. And those are the really tough decisions, but they have to for their own because they don't have the finances in order to be able to do this. So some seniors are in a very tough, I think, situation. So any help we can give them is really a great, you know, it's really a great thing. I'm sure about the families, too. Those, Katie, I bet those are different choices, too, for parents having to make decisions and given the fact of their struggles and they're having. And I think, as you mentioned, I think a lot of people are don't really realize that oftentimes when children are from low-income families, they do receive this assistance for their food. And so, you know, we always have to think about when they're not in school, they're not eating, you know. And so what the impact of days when a school closes or during the summer months, the church just tries to do a lot of things for them out in the field when they're there, but their education is really tied to nutrition and food, mm-hmm. and it is critical that they eat well and they're eating in a timely way as well as far as when they're in school and having those meals. And I think it's a way of teaching, too. You teach people by if you give them good choices, they learn to have them or like them, and it becomes a pattern for them, especially when they're infants or young children. And, mm-hmm. and those things are just very important. How many people might you think you impact in a week or a month that are in early childhood?
Well, looking last year, our 10 child development centers, we serviced around 1,600 children. And that calculated to about 1,300 families. So it's very far-reaching and impacts a lot of the folks and families in Chicago. And what's interesting, too, of those families that we service, 93% are low-income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really – yeah. And how about yourself? Okay.
Well, for the senior services, I mean, currently I'm not sure what the numbers we have for the amount of seniors just because we get senior clients that come and then they go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we're trying to do, like, currently is just, like, servicing more of the home care aides, and then the amount of seniors that we get from IDOA, you know, we try to make sure that they get home care aides that can come in and help them with the needs and the household needs, because the main goal for our senior home care department is to try and keep our seniors in their homes.
Right.
You know, and so it's like I'm currently, like I don't know, like I said, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that it's pretty large because I know like our department is one of the largest department as far as serving the, our senior clients.
Right, yes. So. Yeah, there's many, many, tens of thousands of seniors that receive their nutrition or help, and and it's really important because you educate the educators, you're educating the people that are actually going into their homes. Right. We're going to pause just for a moment, then come back after a break. Thank you.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Good morning. Welcome back to the Voice of Catholic Charities. Monsignor Mike Boland here, and we're talking about nutrition and how that affects. And we have two nutritionists here today. We're talking a little bit about how important it is for very different populations, one being seniors and one being children in our early child development centers, as well as their families. And so what do you think are some of the biggest barriers to these families or to seniors about being able to get high-quality food?
Well, I think one of the biggest barriers when it comes to seniors is that a lot of us seniors don't have that mobility to go to local grocery stores, you know. Or, like, for example, you know, not too long ago, the closing of Dominic's. And so now, you know, if our seniors were so close to living by Dominic's and they were so close to, like, walking to that grocery store, Dominic's grocery store, and now that it's closed, a lot of our seniors have to figure out, well, where am I going to get my groceries?
Right.
You know, how am I going to get to a Jewel that is, you know, 15, 30 minutes away from where I live and things like that. And so, and also a lot of our seniors are on a fixed income. So, you know, not having enough money, because they have to worry about transportation for one thing to go to the grocery store, and then as far as carrying it back home. So that's, I think, is one of the biggest barriers, is just how to get to the grocery stores and coming.
Right. What's yourself, Katie, for?
I would say cost. With 93% of our families being low income, finding the budget and the money to purchase healthy, nutritious meals and food is definitely a challenge. And then, like you mentioned, the food deserts. So not having access or local access to those items, even if they did have the budget to purchase them. So, you know, instead they're going to the convenience store and purchasing milk or eggs at an elevated price than what they could get at a local grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's just really challenging for a lot of people today when we have this big story about the Dominic's closing, and that has really impacted a lot of communities in a very negative way. And especially the poorer communities where they don't have more, that was one of their options, and now that option is gone, and whether somebody comes in there or not is probably still pretty questionable, you know. Mm-hmm. Whether more high traffic areas, Dominic's would, somebody has already bought those stores, but it's the stores in the poorer communities that I think people are not going to be able to kind of like be a part of. And do you ever see or listen to the people, the seniors or the families talk about how they cut corners in order to try to stretch their dollars?
I have personally have not seen, just because I'm very new within the department.
Okay.
And so, you know, I have not gotten the chance to go out to the seniors and just see how they've been cutting down the corners and things like that.
Yeah, so I think we've seen stories about the people who have had to cut down and cut, especially there was a, during the height of the recession, there was extra money put in for food stamps, mm-hmm. and that was taken away. And so it is, I think, a huge challenge. I think the challenge is just the idea of how do you get to the store now that the stores are closed, this idea of food deserts where there's no store in 4 or 5 miles. So all these things accentuate, I think, the challenges. And we've, you know, always worked, when we hear working with seniors, they're always talking about oftentimes not taking medicine or taking it every other day, or because the medication is so expensive, or having to pay bills, or something happens and comes up. So they are real challenging. So it's, I think it's very, very hard, because all that stuff kind of works. So if they're not taking their medicine or they're not eating properly with their medication, right. it can have a domino effect, you know.
And I've seen families stretch their food supply by altering what they're providing as a meal. So the protein is the center of plate. It's the most expensive item in the meal. So I've seen cutting down or cutting back on protein and then offering more grains, as grain is the least expensive of the food groups.
Mm-hmm. How about the sense of, have you seen some of the effects of poor nutrition on the kids or on their families?
We have definitely in our centers. When you're eating poorly, it can obviously it can be linked to long-term health effects, but also current health effects. So if you're a child and you're overweight, you know, you can have liver problems, problems with hip development or bone growth in your legs. You can have problems in early puberty. So there's a lot of effects in the growth when you're not eating properly. And also later in life, you can develop osteoporosis, cardiovascular diseases. And then something that we're seeing in our children in some of the centers is type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is amazing. I think, you know, one of them is the physical ailments that are created both in, you know, we realize in kids are growing and they need certain benchmarks, to make certain benchmarks in their own growth and how that can be hampered. And then I just think it also affects them in their, I'm sure, when you can't go to school and be hungry because you're not thinking about what they're being taught. And so that's another real challenge too, I think, just in the their educational development too, is just, which is why the importance of the process of having a breakfast or a lunch there or a snack is really to help keep the kids obviously getting good nutrition and helping them with their growth, but also their academics. They can stand, they can actually function much greater and much better. How about for seniors? What are some of the ailments you might see or physical challenges they might get because of poor health, because of poor nutrition?
Well, one of the things is, like, a lot of our seniors have dementia or Alzheimer's. So with that, it's forgetfulness to, like, remember to eat their breakfast or lunch or dinner or any of that. And then another thing is, like, one of the things that Katie said is, like, osteoporosis, you know, not getting enough calcium intake. And so, you know, that will also lead to, like, also poor nutrition. And then also a lot of our seniors may not be able to know the amount of food. I guess what I'm trying to say is that a lot of our seniors, they need help with preparing. So if they live alone, they are not able to, like, you know, fish food from themselves or, you know, have their daily needs that they need for their life.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges too, if you have a loan, it's hard to fix a breakfast, or I mean, or lunch or dinner. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the sense of it's not. A lot of times, it's nice when you eat with someone. Mm-hmm. So, it's, food oftentimes is a social thing for seniors. I'm say, I think one of it's very hard to actually have proportion of food that you can buy and prepare that you don't have it for so long, because then you get sick of it, or you don't eat it, or you don't properly take care of it, and you get sick. So I think sometimes for seniors too, it's just a very, it's a, I think anyone who lives alone is a challenge, because to have things in proportion to cooking things is always a huge challenge, I think, for them as well. But we're going to pause just for a moment and then come back after our break. Thank you.
Many couples don't understand the beauty of natural family planning because of misinformation of its effectiveness for achieving or postponing a pregnancy, or they have never been told about how it works. Marriage Ministries has created an easy way for couples to learn about NFP. It is available on a website called learnnfponline.com and is a course that teaches the Billings ovulation method on demand, so you can work through it at your convenience. Through this online course, couples will watch a video of the science, rules, and application of the method with a testimony from a young couple using NFP successfully. If you are working with engaged couples, preparing for marriage yourself, or are already married and would like to draw closer to your spouse, check out Learn NFP Online for yourself. Go to learnnfponline.com or marriageministries.com today.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Voice of Catholic Charities. I'm Monsignor Mike Boland here. We're the Voice of Catholic Charities on Relevant Radio, and we're having a conversation today about nutrition, especially how it may affect seniors and affect children and their families. And so these conversations are really helpful as we try to delve deeper into the issues, what affects a lot of individuals or people. And I know many of our listeners today are seniors, and many of them have grandkids. And what are some tips we think we could give them about how to eat better on a budget?
My personal tip is, you know, plan. You know, you got to plan. You got to write out a grocery list and, like, see what it is you're buying. Because sometimes if you don't have a grocery list or a plan and you go to the store, you don't even know what to look for. And so you just start biting. And you do that kind of, I do it, like, more like the eye method, where, like, you see something that you like, oh, I want that. But versus if you have a plan and you have a grocery list, you know exactly what it is you need to buy and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important. How about, you know, we always hear these constant discussions about obesity, in, especially in America, for adults and children that seems to be on the rise. What are some better things, better ways they could eat that might help them in this situation of either getting to a state of obesity or just if they are in that condition?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons why obesity exists. I don't think you can really pinpoint it just on nutrition. It's kind of like cumulative. So with our families, when we discuss being obese or being overweight, we like to hit three areas. We talk about nutrition, we talk about physical activity, and behavior patterns. So with nutrition, we want to make sure we're eating enough calories and also including the right foods in our diet. Eating fruits and vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, and dairy on a regular basis. With physical activity, we recommend 60 minutes of physical activity a day for children. And then behavior patterns is something we focus on with the family. So eating together, eating meals as a family, sitting down with the TV off so you can focus on the food and the environment, rewarding the children with attention and not with food. Children develop eating patterns and behaviors at a young age. So we want to make sure the parents know how to develop healthy eating patterns in their children. And then also something we talk about with the parents is just being a good role model for your child.
Right. I think that's what, you know, people don't realize. I mean, for all of us, when we grew up, that's what we learned from the example of your parents, or just the whole idea of a family meal, of sitting down and, you know, the interactions, and just, you know, sometimes that's becoming a lost art of families having dinners together or communications about how their day is, and then to see about what's being put before them, you know. So if you have options that are healthier and good, you I think you teach by example, and I think that's really an important part that sometimes parents don't realize, or they think they're going to be, you know, the kids had a tough day or they had a tough day, they're going to have something that maybe they shouldn't have, and then that becomes a pattern, and then they don't have this idea of what is good food or what is nutrition, you know. So that's always, I think, also a tremendous challenge. What are some, you know, maybe some advice we could give to the people that are listening to us about good nutrition to their families or to seniors? And what are some of your thoughts?
Well, like for seniors, especially those who live at home and also have dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, for family members or home carers to cook ahead of time. That will definitely help the seniors. If they cook ahead of time, then they can microwave, they have meals for like 5 days of the week. Mm-hmm. So that's like one of my biggest advice.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
With our families, we recommend, I call it the three P's, you plan, purchase, and prepare. So like we mentioned earlier, plan out your meals for the week, even include snacks. You want to hit all the areas, so you plan, make a list. You also want to check for coupons, whether in the local paper or online. And then purchase. So go to the grocery store with your list. Stick to your list. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't go hungry or with your children being hungry because it's always tempting. Buy store brands. They can be cheaper than other brands that are available. Choose fresh fruits and vegetables that are in season. And avoid convenience foods. So foods that are prepackaged, like TV dinner meals or some of the ready-to-go meals. Those typically can be higher in cost, but also they're more processed and they have less nutritional value.
Mm-hmm.
And the last step is just prepare. Yeah. So like you mentioned, prepare meals ahead of time, and you can easily store them in the freezer and then reheat them up as needed.
And how would you help parents or adults who are buying food to know what the processed food is? Like are they see in their freezer? Mm-hmm. Where you see Lean Cuisine or you see others ones, which is good or which are bad? Is there something in the label or something they can look at?
Labels can be deceiving. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I mentioned to our families is to look at the ingredient label. The fewer things on there, probably the better. Mm-hmm. Has fewer additives.
And also look at the sodium content because, you know, we have a lot of the convenience or like processed food are really high in sodium. So if you want to look at the amount of sodium, if it's high in sodium, then I personally wouldn't recommend purchasing it.
Right, right. And that's just all the process of us learning more and more about what we're eating, and it becomes more of a science or an intentionality than we have, I think, sometimes in our past. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us on our show today and for helping us understand more about nutrition, both for our seniors and our families and kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
For joining us. Thank you.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day and God bless you. This is Cardinal Francis George. I invite you to join me for the next few minutes to reflect with Father Robert Barron on the Word of God, which is the Word on Fire. Word on Fire Catholic Ministries is a nonprofit ministry at the forefront of Catholic evangelization, using new media to spread the faith on every continent. Father Barron challenges us to open our hearts to the Word on Fire, which is God's Word of love for each of us. If our hearts are open, the Lord can change and transform us, so that we might speak with love about the one who is love. The global benefactors of Word on Fire, with the support of the Archdiocese of Chicago, now present Word on Fire.
Peace be with you. Friends, hope is in the air, not just because it's Advent, Christmas is coming, but because Pope Benedict has written an encyclical letter on hope. And our readings today for this third Sunday of Advent are all about hope. You know, there are natural virtues. I've spoken to you about them before. Justice, prudence, temperance, fortitude. These were recognized by Aristotle and Plato and Cicero. They come through reason and habituation. Any reasonable person can acquire them and practice them. Okay, and the church has always embraced the natural virtues. But above and beyond these natural virtues are what our tradition calls supernatural or theological virtues. These come not through reason and practice, but through the inrushing of grace. Only when grace comes rushing into your life are you imbued with these virtues of faith, hope, and love. So I want to talk about hope. The readings are filled with this theme today. What is hope? It's the theological virtue by which our lives are ordered toward heaven and the things of heaven as our ultimate good. Let me say that again. Hope is the theological virtue. It comes from the inrushing of grace. The virtue by which our lives are ordered toward heaven and the things of heaven as our ultimate good. Hope is that virtue that pushes us beyond this world and its struggles and conflicts and directs the gaze of our soul to a finally transcendent fulfillment. Does hope eschew the goods of this world? No, no, it affirms them. There are lots of goods in this world, but it knows that the ultimate good, the final good, lies in a transcendent realm beyond this one. You know, it's most important to note, and Pope Benedict says this very clearly in his encyclical, that hope, this theological virtue, is not the same as optimism. You know, we talk about pessimists and optimists, and well, we prefer optimists to pessimists. Well, optimism is just that worldly attitude that says all will be well, or things will be fine, things will work out. It's a kind of upbeat assessment of the situation here below. You see, friends, here's the grim truth. From a purely worldly or natural perspective, the right attitude is not optimism. It's pessimism. How come? Well, look, in the long run, every one of us is dead. It's true. In the long run, everyone's dead. In the long run, every one of our projects and plans comes to dust. In the long run, nothing in this world finally satisfies us. Ooh, bad news, pessimistic. Well, yeah, okay, but tell me one thing that's false about it. You know, I probably shared with you before this image from the great German philosopher Schopenhauer. He said, here's an image for life. There's a man on a raft that's going down a very swift rapids. He's got a stick in his hand, and he tries desperately to stave off the rocks and to keep this raft afloat. Down and down it goes into ever more dangerous situations. He's desperately staying on top of it. And then finally, he goes over the waterfall to his death. That's an image of life, Schopenhauer says. And what's wrong with it? What's incorrect about that image? There we are in this kind of flimsy raft. We're staving off our various fears and failures and difficulties. And at the end of the day, every one of us will go over the waterfall. The pessimists, in a worldly sense, have it right. Jean-Paul Sartre, you know, the founder of existentialism, one of the most pessimistic philosophers of modern times, had it right when he said, there's no exit. There's no exit from this life. I mean, we're stuck here in this negativity. There's no way out. I mentioned before, one of my great heroes is Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, consciously playing off of Sartre, says in one of his songs, listen, There's no exit in any direction except the one you can't see with your eyes. Huh. Now that, I submit to you, is a biblical voice. That's the voice of someone who is not optimistic, but hopeful. Let me say it again. There's no exit in any direction. Bob Dylan here is agreeing with Sartre. In a worldly sense, there's no way out of this. Except the one you can't see with your eyes. What is the exit? What is the way out? What is the avenue of hope? It is something supernatural. It's a transcendent good that goes beyond all the limits and frustrations of this world. Okay? With these ideas in mind, with this basic distinction between hope and optimism in mind, let's take a look at this lyrical, beautiful reading from the 35th chapter of the prophet Isaiah. It's our first reading for this Sunday. Listen. The desert and the parched land will exult. The steppe will rejoice and bloom. They will bloom with abundant flowers and rejoice with joyful song. He goes on. The eyes of the blind will be open. The ears of the deaf be clear. The tongues of the dumb shall sing. And then finally, the ransomed of the Lord will enter Zion and be crowned with everlasting joy. Huh. That's Isaiah's vision. Beautiful, lyrical. Yeah, it is. I think especially for desert people like Isaiah and his contemporaries, this vision of the desert blooming. I've seen it, by the way. You go out to Arizona, and if the rain falls, you get a sort of a monsoon rain, suddenly the desert will just bloom with flowers. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. So desert people saw the aptness and beauty of that image. The ransomed of the Lord returning to Zion. Oh, that's a basic theme, isn't it, in the Old Testament? That the exiled people would one day return. So Isaiah dreams they'll be crowned with everlasting joy. Okay, beautiful, lyrical, yes. Realistic? Yeah, sometimes the desert blooms for a few hours or a few days, and then it returns to desert. The eyes of the blind will be open. Well, yeah, maybe through a miraculous medical intervention, blind people might come to see. The ears of deaf be cleared. Yeah, I suppose from time to time that happens. But let's face it, in a number of years, those people will die. The tongues of the dumb will sing. Yeah, I suppose that's possible in this world. But even if it is, even if that happens rarely, at the end of the day, even those people will return to dust. Did the ransomed of Yahweh return to Zion? Yeah, they did. And they had everlasting joy. Soon enough, the temple, soon enough, the political establishment became corrupt. Oh, and in time, the Jews were conquered again and exiled again. What's my point here? When looked at from a purely this worldly perspective, these are just idle dreams. Everlasting joy, the desert blooming with flowers. Well, not really in this world. So what's Isaiah talking about? And why do we in the church take him seriously, reading him to this present day? Because the blooming of the desert of which he speaks is not a blooming within the context of this fallen world. It's a realization that will occur through the power of God in a transfigured world to come. Let me say that again. It's not something we should hope for within the context and confines of this world, but rather a realization that will occur through the power of God in a transfigured world to come. And what is the Zion of which Isaiah is speaking? Well, it's not the worldly Zion, finally, not the earthly city of Jerusalem, but the Zion on high, the heavenly Jerusalem, where through the power of God's grace, we will find definitive ransom and everlasting joy. Friends, these are readings about hope, not about optimism. They're not naive, this worldly speculations. They are filled with the theological virtue of hope. Now, I know what some critics might be thinking as they hear this language. Oh, there's the old pipe dream, the old pie in the sky when you die theology, which advocates a turning away from this world and its needs. Here's a dangerously dualistic spirituality of the next world, etc., etc. Gosh, in the years I was coming of age, I heard this sort of rhetoric all the time. If you talked about hope and about heaven, about a world to come, you were always accused of being dualist, that you didn't care about this world. But see, let me insist upon something here. By far the most dangerous people in the world are optimists. What I mean are those who believe that all can be made well here below. Oh, with enough economic or political or social reform, with enough scientific advancement, with enough psychological development, all will be made well here below. You want to know the names of some famous optimists? Marx, Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, Mao were all optimists in this sense. That is to say, men without hope. If you think all can be well in this world, if you think, yes, the desert can bloom in this world, yes, we can be definitively ransomed in this world, then you will go to any extreme to make it happen. And now there's the story of the 20th century. Lenin said, you have to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. Well, that meant to him the death of 10 million, 20 million people. Sure, if you can realize human flourishing in this world, you will press it. You will pay any price to achieve it. Who were those, perhaps ironically, paradoxically, who did achieve the greatest social reform in the last century? People like Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, John Paul II. Optimists? Nope. People of hope? Yep. People who believed, who looked to the transcendent fulfillment. And they were the ones, ironically, paradoxically, who effected the most powerful social change here below. The letter of James, our second reading, says, be patient, brothers, till the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer awaits the precious yield of the soil. He looks forward to it patiently while the soil receives the winter and spring rains. Yes, the seeds are planted here. But the harvest is in the future. The harvest is something we hope for in a world to come. And God bless you.
I hope you were moved today by the word on fire. I pray that together we might become a people on fire with love for God and neighbor here in Chicago and wherever these words are heard. Until we join Father Barron again next week, I'm Cardinal Francis George, and I pray that God will bless you and those you love.
I think you're right. We have to start it with really what's the moral framework to look at this issue.
Yeah, but for what it's worth, I think Vince makes a good point, but it's more than, well, I think the church is beyond the point where it could simply make a pronouncement and expect everybody to just jump to. Bob says, yeah, we're in the secular world. We live in a political world. We do have to talk about what embryonic stem cell research is, and certainly we have on this show, we have on the regular Catholic Community of Faith show, we do in the Catholic New World all the time. But people have to pay attention to that, and in a world that is media saturated, you have to keep saying it. So let's say it again.
Absolutely. What we've tried to do in that regard is there are some people that are very articulate about the embryonic stem cell front from a scientific perspective as well as from a religious faith-based perspective. Father Tad Boholcek, who we've had in town a couple times, and as a matter of fact, I think he's coming back in town like in mid-September.
His column is going to appear fairly regularly in the Catholic New World over the next couple of months as
well. And to talk about a little bit what's going on with the beginnings of human life. And Vince, you bring up a really good issue in terms of what's going on with the discarding of embryos or the lack of regulations on IVF clinics, on other types of infertility that's going on out there. This is a whole area that, quite frankly, I don't think enough people are looking at. We're starting to bring up the questions, but boy, I'll tell you, it is something that it is an area that is widely unregulated in terms of what's going on with.
But it's going to be up to people like David Rice and people in government, both legislative and executive, to craft the rules to handle it.
Right.
This is, you know, holy anger is a wonderful thing, but you're not going to have mobs doing it. You have to do this politically.
Yeah,
I think we have to carry the holy anger forward, but for the time being, we've got to stop the public funding of this practice.
Right,
and that's what we're so frustrated with these executive orders and what we're trying so hard to do, so that then we can have the true debate about, is this an ethical practice or not?
Absolutely. We have to take another quick break. We're on the phone here once again with Representative David Rice from Effingham, talking about the Catholic Conference's position on the beginnings and experimentation with the beginnings of human life, as Vince so eloquently pointed out. And the moral aspects of that. We're with Tom Sheridan, my co-host. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in about 1 minute and 30 seconds, I'm being told. Once again, the phone number, if you wish to join our conversation, is 312-751-1979. We'll be back after this brief message.
Good morning and welcome to Echoing God's Word, the radio program sponsored by the Office for Catechesis and Youth Ministry. I am Clarissa Alhantara.
And I am Joshua Smizer De Leon.
And we are your hosts for this month's program, focusing on a mid-year catch-up and kind of mashup slash news show of important topics that influence and assist our catechetical leaders today. It's probably no surprise, but sometimes January can be a little slow, given that we've just finished Christmas and New Year, and if you're here in Chicago, you've probably just about finished digging out from our last snowstorm. So we wanted to take an opportunity to show and check up on the year of strong Catholic parents, strong Catholic youth, and we'll be starting off our show talking about Evangelii Gaudium, the exhortation on joy that Pope Francis released late last year. On our show today, we have Boston College professor Tom Groom, who is joining us via telephone from from Boston, Massachusetts. And we also have Lisa Mercero, who is a presenter for the Strong Catholic Parents. Professor Groom, can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you, Teresa. Well, first thing to say is I just came back from Chicago to Boston, and I was happy to come home here, even though our weather is not quite as severe as yours. So I was there for the really cold weather. I've been teaching theology and religious education here at Boston College for, 38 years now. I sometimes say I started just after I made my first Holy Communion, but that isn't quite true. And most of my work has been focused on the challenge of handing on our faith in life-giving and responsible ways. Ways that are faithful to the tradition, but then life for the life of the world, as Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 51. It must all be for the life of the world as well. And so that's been my work for the last 38 years. I've had wonderful students like yourself, Teresa, across the years, and thousands of others that have gone out, and I think they're still doing wonderful work in trying to hand on our faith, our Catholic faith, to this in this postmodern world, and doing it very well.
You know, Professor Groom, I think we'll keep you, after we go off air, we're going to keep you on so you can tell us some stories about a young Clarissa as a student.
No, that's okay. I'm sure he's got other things to do, Josh.
Josh, you'd have to pay me.
Well, thank you for being here, Professor. We're also blessed to have with us Lisa Mercero, who comes to us from St. Matthew Parish. It's in Schaumburg. Lisa, could you tell us a little more about yourself?
Sure. Nice to be with you all. I am a DRE here at St. Matthew's in Schaumburg, and I currently attend Catholic Theological Union, and I'll be getting my master's degree in pastoral studies this May. Hooray!
That's awesome. We're actually going to the same school. I'm getting my master's in divinity.
Oh,
maybe
cool.
I'll see. We must have passed each other in the halls.
We must have.
I'm sorry. Go on. I have that bad habit of just poking into people's conversations.
So, and last spring, I was able to get a certificate in lay ecclesial ministry from University of St. Mary at the Lagan up in Mundelein. And I'm a certified CRE with the Archdiocese of Chicago. So a lot of experience going on, here and really excited to bring this experience to St. Matthew's and to the Archdiocese in the larger part.
Yeah, it sounds like you are very busy doing God's work and very informed about your faith as well. So thank you so much, Lisa. As your host for Echoing God's Word, we wanted to try our hand at a little more newsier show this time around. And given that we represent the Office for Catechesis, it seemed really fitting to do a show briefly outlining Evangelii Gaudium. It came out late last year, for those of you who don't know, and it's a really great reference to anyone who's interested in learning more about their faith. Practically speaking, though, it's got a lot of references to catechists, which is why we brought Professor Groom on the show. Professor Groom, can you tell us your initial thoughts on Evangelii Gaudium and how it can really affect catechetical leaders today?
Teresa, it's what I would, without exaggeration, it's a fantastic document. It's an amazing statement. Anyone who reads it will be inspired, will be enthused, will be joyful in their faith again. And of course, he crafts it around evangelization, but then evangelization, as all the directories and Evangelii Nuntiandi and all the other great documents of the Church, starting with the Vatican Council, evangelization is simply the first moment, in a sense, that has to be followed by catechesis. Evangelization is getting people enthused about their faith, getting people interested in the faith, if they haven't been a Christian in Christian faith before. But then after evangelization, just like in the early church, the evangelistes were the ones who got people excited and brought them into the church. But the didaskaloi, the teachers, were the ones who had to settle down and help to form them as living Christians. So in a sense, catechesis and evangelization are two sides of the same coin. So while this is indeed the language of evangelization is dominant here, although catechesis occurs a number of times toward the end of the document especially, but really they're two sides of the same coin. So this is a document for all catechists and for anybody who is interested in sharing this Christian faith of ours and spreading it. And I suppose the key point of it all, it's well summarized in the title of the document, the joy, Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel. And this is the whole theme throughout. He has a wonderful line in there. He says, evangelists, and I would add catechists, should never look like people who have just come back from a funeral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very true.
In other words, and then another time he says, they shouldn't be sourpusses. And he says, this is what's wrong, that we're like people who have just come back from a funeral. We're sourpusses about this faith of ours. Whereas the way to present it, I see this as kind of a whole new apologetic for our faith. New in the sense that it's new to us. It's as old, of course, as the church. In the sense of being enthused about it and saying, this is a great way to live your life. There's not a word of threat in this. There's no fear of hell or promise of heaven and all the old apologetics that we've used. There's no attempt to prove that we're the only ones who are right and everybody else is wrong. The old apologetics that your generation did not grow up with, but mine did, there's none of that here at all. What's here is the kind of apologetics you find in the first Christian communities, going out into the world saying to people, we've got fantastic good news for you. You have been saved. You have been set free. You have been redeemed. And this is a tremendous way to live your life. There's no better way to live your life than following the way that Jesus of Nazareth modeled for us, and then as the risen Christ, by the abundance of God's grace, made possible for us to so live. And its focus on the historical Jesus, I think, is one of the richest aspects of the document, because he's basically turning us to saying, we live as disciples, and it's a marvelous way to live. We have to follow the way modeled by Jesus, but then, as I said, he was also the Son of God and the second person of the Blessed Trinity, and so his dying and rising in his Paschal mystery made it possible for us to follow the way. And so it's this tremendous enthusiasm, joy. What a wonderful, merciful, compassionate, hospitable, loving, faith-filled, hopeful, you name it, all the great values and desires of the human heart
can be found in following the way of Jesus. And this is what he's saying. He's saying, we've got a tremendous thing to sell. And he says one place, Jesus is, in a sense, I don't have the document in front of me, but I can't find it immediately. Jesus is still the best thing we've got in this faith of ours. So let's put him out there. Let's put him out there as our model, as our redeemer, as our savior. And he constantly uses the word of freedom. In fact, he uses freedom much more often than redemption or salvation. That just Jesus has set us free. Now, he's being influenced, of course, I suppose, by his own background in South America and coming out of liberation theology and so on. But it's just a tremendous document. I'm so enthused about it. Everybody's, any catechist will be tremendously enlightened, inspired, enthused from reading it.
Professor, I had a quick question, too, a follow-up question. I'm a bad Catholic. You know, I've only gone through one chapter so far. I was trying to prepare for the show, and I'm meaning to get around to it. I got to it, and I've noticed Pope Francis uses a lot of I's instead of a more formal we in his writing, and it really feels like he's talking with you as opposed
Absolutely.
To talking at you. And talking to other people, I get the sense that they pick up on that, too.
Yeah, and the only time he uses we is when he's genuinely referring to himself and us. So in other words, it's not the royal plural that he's using. He's saying we, I and you, sinners though we are, but never be, now always remember God never gets tired of forgiving us, even though we're sinners. He repeats that a number of times. And I and we have to go out there. His own humility throughout is extraordinary. And also many other features which you as young trained theologians would recognize as you read on. Like he cites bishop conferences.
I need to cut you off. Don't mean to be rude, but we got to take a short break.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts. I'm sure you've encouraged a lot of people to read and learn more about the Pope's call to proclaiming the joy of the gospel. So we'll come back. We'll come back. We'll talk to Lisa Mercer about strong Catholic parents. Stay tuned.
Men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
That's the sound I love to hear, the sound of happy children in a Catholic school. Wouldn't you want every child to be able to attend a Catholic school? Well, that's my dream. I want every child who wants to attend a Catholic school to be able to do so. Hi, this is Sister Mary Paul McCaughey, Superintendent of Chicago Catholic Schools, and I've been working in Catholic schools since I was 19 years old because I really want to teach who Christ is. Over the next 3 years, you can support our efforts to teach who Christ is with your prayers and your generous financial support. Together, we will ensure that the Catholic schools, which are the best schools in America, will be open and available for all families who wish to send their children.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Please help us in our efforts to teach who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
I want to know who Christ is.
For more information on this campaign for Catholic education and faith formation, visit toteachwhochristis.org.
I want to know who Christ is.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I am still getting used to being a co-host on this show. I'm just so excited to be here, especially with the two amazing guests we have on today, Professor Groom and Lisa Merzereau. Professor, I had to cut you off before we were going into break, so I just wanted to give you time to finish off your thoughts.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was just saying, the pattern, the whole genre of the document is very different from how we're accustomed to coming from popes, you know, where the only popes typically only quote other popes. You know, as my predecessor of happy memory says, is the typical pattern. There's none of that in this at all. He quotes bishops' conferences. He quotes a number of theologians, Gardini, Aquinas, and so on. So he's obviously drawing from the faith life of the whole church rather than just from papal documents and from his own biography and background. So the style of it is very different as well.
Okay, great.
If there were, like, a couple practical pieces that you could say, I mean, the document is really fantastic, but if you were to give kind of advice to, you know, catechists and DREs in the field in terms of how to really approach this document, what are, like, one or two points that you could give them?
Yes, I think toward the end he gets into methodology somewhat, and basically what he says is we have to connect with people's lives. We have to take this good news, this gospel, this rich Catholic tradition and faith of ours, and make it relevant. I mean, that's an overused word, but make it integral to people's lives. Help people to see how it can be lived with richly and with great wisdom and joy in the ordinary and the everyday. It can't be just coming, you know, proclaiming dogmas and doctrines and slinging them at people. It has to be deep down engagement with the ordinary and everyday of people's lives, and within that context, to give people access to this rich faith, where they become to see for themselves the wisdom of it, the value of it, the richness of it, and how it can bring joy to their lives.
Fantastic.
That's the key.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I think just going back to your one of your initial points about just the title of the document says so much about not so much the document, but also how we as Catholics, how we as Christians are really called to live our faith in very practical ways. We'd like to thank you so much for being part of our show.
You're very welcome. And blessings on your own good work. And hello to my good friends in Chicago.
Thank you so much. Goodbye, Professor Groom.
Goodbye now. Bye-bye.
Have a great one.
So, with us still on the program, Lisa, just kind of taking us into the second piece of our show, we are catching up with you for the Year of Strong Catholic Parents. Can you briefly explain to our listeners what the Year of Strong Catholic Parents means for those here in the Archdiocese?
Oh, sure. Well, it's part of the strategic pastoral plan of the Archdiocese, and so through that pastoral plan, an initiative was formed called Strong Catholic Families, Strong Catholic Youth, and that is a partnership between the Family Ministries Office and the Office for Catechesis and Youth Ministry.
So, Lisa, right now you are a presenter for the year Strong Catholic Parents. What exactly goes into being a facilitator? How would you describe your role for those that are not familiar with what a presenter is?
Okay. Well, it's very involved. There, even before I am invited to a parish as a presenter or a facilitator, there is a lot of meetings beforehand with the team, with the Strong Catholic Families team, led by Amanda Thompson at the Archdiocese. And so what she'll do is she'll meet with the pastor, any of the other priests at the parishes, and the pastoral staff, and she'll go over, you know, why this would be of help to a parish. And then once they are all on board and they, you know, begin to form a task force or a committee, then my job is to come in to present so that we can help the parents understand their critical role as the domestic church, and basically give them tools and tips. And as Professor Groom just said, joyously hand on the faith to their children and teens. So I was captivated by what he was saying because of it is very important to meet the families where they are as a director of religious education.
So Lisa, as a presenter, are you, I guess for lack of a better word, stationed at St. Matthew, or do you outreach to other parishes?
Oh no, I go wherever Thompson sends me. So,
she can be so demanding. I got to talk to her.
Well, you know, we were all trained in the Archdiocese. There was at least four meetings that I remember. It was probably five, but I know I attended four. And so what we had to do was say, okay, tell me which vicariate she would go in and to travel to, because, you know, we are all in this together. You know, once we have a specialty or a skill or a training or something, you know, just like our faith, we don't keep it under a bushel basket. We go and help others. And so, yeah, so I've presented mostly in Vicariate 2. St. Matthew's is in Vicariate 1. I did present once in Vicariate 1. But mostly it's been in Vicariate 2 parishes.
So when you're talking to, when you're going out to these parishes, and it's all parents that make up the groups that you're presenting
yes.
to? Okay. So these parents, have you noticed anything, any information that they're gravitating to more than other pieces of information that you're sharing with them? What's really sticking out to them and really sticking in their brains?
Well, when we present, what is sticking with them is that they, for some reason, and, you know, they think that they don't have the ability to partnership with the church for some reason. We sort of know why that is historically, but they're coming in sometimes, most of the times, as young adults, and a lot of the times they're saying that they didn't receive strong catechesis when they were children and teens, and so now they feel that there's a hole, you know, in their lives that they want to now fill by becoming adult disciples. By learning the faith all again, and by, you know, having a really primary role in handing on the faith to their children. So that's the primary thing that we have been, you know, getting as the feedback at these parent meetings, is that they really are hungering and they're seekers, and we are helping them with resources and by talking with them and, you know, staying in touch with the parish to see how you know, we can help them as, you know, representatives for this initiative.
Fantastic. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a break, and then you can come back after the break, and we'll finish up with you.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future.
120 years later, the Catholic New World is bolder and better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization.
Look for our new e-edition at CatholicNewWorld.com. Easy access, simple to use, searchable and shareable, and free for a limited time. While you're there, subscribe or call 312-534-7777.
Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Many couples don't understand the beauty of natural family planning because of misinformation of its effectiveness for achieving or postponing a pregnancy, or they have never been told about how it works. Marriage Ministries has created an easy way for couples to learn about NFP. It is available on a website called learnnfponline.com and is a course that teaches the Billings ovulation method on demand, so you can work through it at your convenience. Through this online course, couples will watch a video of the science, rules, and application of the method with a testimony from a young couple using NFP successfully. If you are working with engaged couples, preparing for marriage yourself, or are already married and would like to draw closer to your spouse, check out Learn NFP Online for yourself. Go to learn